Tomorrow, on the third anniversary of the start of the full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the French President Emmanuel Macron will visit the White House. The meeting takes place as European leaders scramble to respond to the US President's decision to negotiate directly with Russia to end the war in Ukraine, sidelining Europe and President Zelensky. A separate meeting will take place on Thursday between the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer and President Trump. It is a crucial week for Ukraine and indeed for Europe as the relationship between the United States and Russia grows stronger. In a moment, we'll get some analysis, but first let's go to Washington, D.C. and speak with Politico's White House reporter Daniel Lipman. Daniel, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
There was alarm and widespread condemnation of President Trump from world leaders during the week when he accused Ukraine of starting the war and described President Zelensky as a dictator. How are those comments received by his own supporters and by figures in the Republican Party?
Well, I don't think his supporters mostly agree with Trump on that allegation, but they are also not paying attention to the close details of the negotiations. They're focused more on their own personal lives, on the economy. And a lot of his supporters are concerned that the U.S. has put in tens of billions of dollars and it's become a stalemate. So they want Trump to negotiate and end the war, but they also don't want the war to restart in a few years if Russia rearms.
Tomorrow, the French President Emmanuel Macron will become the first European leader to visit the White House. What can you say about the relationship between the two men and how you would see that meeting playing out?
Well, it's been pretty good over the years, although Macron hasn't had a great track record of persuading Trump to adopt the policies he wanted. So remember, Macron tried to keep Trump in the Paris Climate Accord. He was unsuccessful. He tried to keep Trump in the Iranian nuclear agreement, also a fail. And so I think what they're seeing with Trump is that in the first term, he was much more uncertain of a leader. As a leader, he did not know his way around. This time, he is much more confident. And so, of course, they're going to try to persuade him to back Ukraine to the tilt, to the hilt. But Trump is much more sure of himself, and he doesn't really take as much feedback from leaders since he feels like he has a good handle on the job.
And later in the week, on Thursday, the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer will meet the President. Again, Ukraine being top of the agenda. Is President Trump likely to be open to altering his position in relation to negotiating a deal to end the war in Ukraine without Europe or even without Kyiv being at the table?
Well, I think what Trump wants is the positive headlines of stopping this gruesome war. And so even his national security advisor has said, hey, he's going to get the Nobel Peace Prize for doing this. But he also doesn't want the bad headlines of, hey, you negotiated a terrible deal. You gave up everything to the Russians. And so what Starmer is going to try to do is tell Trump, hey, you're a peacemaker. We want to end this war too, but we also don't want to sell the Ukrainians short. I will say one other thing about American skepticism about participating in this war further is Americans have 20 years of war from Iraq and Afghanistan. And so there's still that overhang, and Americans feel like, hey, we spent trillions of dollars and thousands of troops. That they're kind of more looking inward these days than outside the US.
All right, Daniel, thank you very much for speaking with us. That's Politico's White House reporter Daniel Lipman. Let's get some analysis now. And we are joined in our studio by Ben Tonra, Professor of International Relations at the UCD School of Politics. Ben Tonra, good afternoon and thank you for joining us. Tomorrow, we will head into the fourth year of the war in Ukraine. We're seeing now this strengthening of the relationship between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. How dangerous a moment is this for Europe?
I think in the 30 years I've been studying European security and defence, I've never been more anxious and frankly more frightened as the prospects that are before us. Donald Trump has turned over 75, 80 years of European security defence principles. And what he's doing with Russia at the moment really has little or nothing to do with peace per se. These negotiations aren't about peace, they're about Donald Trump. And there are three things that we can identify he's trying to achieve. One, as you say, is a reset, a new relationship with Russia, which he sees as an ideological ally, and he has a personal peculiar affinity to dictators in general. His second objective appears to be to turn a profit on the aid that he's provided to Ukraine thus far. That is to say, they've provided about $180 billion in economic and military assistance. And now President Trump is trying to extort about $500 billion of Ukrainian assets, rare earth metals and minerals. And the third objective, and this relates to Andrew Lipman's point, is that Trump has a longstanding antipathy to NATO itself and the principles that underlie NATO. And Trump's ambition is to remove U.S. troops from Europe, to remove U.S. bases from Europe, and basically take out the NATO's mutual security guarantee to release, if you like, the United States from European security defense. And those things together is what he's negotiating. And he needs effectively a ceasefire to achieve those three.
So given what you're saying, then, how should Emmanuel Macron approach his meeting with Donald Trump tomorrow, and what can he hope to achieve?
I think what he has to do, he has to sail with Trump's wind in terms of securing an end to the hostilities and allowing the United States room and latitude to effectively pull out. So therefore, what he wants to achieve is some kind of a principled agreement that Europe will step up in terms of its own security defense, but it still needs sort of a residual U.S. commitment and capacity, particularly in the air, to forestall Russia. Whether he can secure that out of Donald Trump is genuinely a question that we have yet to see. I mean, Trump just yesterday, you know, took a knife to the U.S. military leadership, and we don't know what those people's preferences and principles are.
Or if he does secure it, whether he can even rely on it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a genuine question because, you know, with Trump, it is always difficult to ascertain a pattern in his thinking or his negotiations. All we can really be sure of is that whatever it is, it's about Trump.
Later in the week, then on Thursday, Keir Starmer will have his meeting with President Trump. Ukraine, again, the key focus there. How tricky is that going to be for the UK, which is not in the EU and is also keen to preserve its special relationship with the United States and keen to do trade deals with the US as well?
It's a really tough situation. In effect, what the UK has been trying to say over the last couple of weeks is that they could offer a bridge between Europe and the United States. And that metaphor is quite literally in flames. They effectively have to fish or cut bait. And I think what we have seen over the last couple of days is a lot of coordination between London and Paris, a lot of talks between London and Paris. And I think Keir Starmer going into those negotiations is going to say much the same that Macron is saying as well, that there has to be a US security component as part of any prospective deal.
If Donald Trump holds firm on his position to do a deal with Russia, locking Europe out of the talks, locking Kyiv out of the talks, and at the same time then threatening to pull funds from Ukraine, What is the response going to be from Europe and from the UK?
It's going to have to be a hell of a lot of backbone. What Europeans are going to have to say is there is no deal about us without us. And, you know, Trump can put whatever he likes on the table with Vladimir Putin. But if the Europeans turn around and say, this deal is not our deal, we are not subject to it, we are not participating in it.
But he holds some of the cards, doesn't he? I mean, he's got the funds and he's got the military firepower, which he's currently using to support Ukraine. So if he withdraws those, what does Europe do?
Well, let's be clear. The United States has provided about $180 billion of support. The European Union has provided about $140 billion in support. And the European Union is expected to announce tomorrow a further $20 billion in military support. Now, the European Union is in a hole. Don't get me wrong. The military capacity of the European Union is much less than it should be, and the European states. But there is work that can be done. There is a capacity for the Europeans to fill in that U.S. gap. And also, you have to think about the political repercussions for Trump. If he has seen to cut and run, I mean, again, his whole persona is this macho man persona. If he's seen to cut and run in the face of Russia, he'll get a lot of domestic political blowback. So that's something he wants to avoid as well.
Okay. Can I ask you then about Ireland's position in all of this? The Taoiseach signalled this week that Ireland would consider sending peacekeepers to Ukraine in the event that there was some sort of a ceasefire deal being struck. How likely is it that that would happen? And do our defence forces have the capabilities to do that?
Well, this is the question. It's a question of principle and practice. In principle, Ireland would participate in a UN-sanctioned operation. Whether the deal done between the US and Russia would be UN-sanctioned, we just don't know. We don't know what the machinations in the Security Council might be. We don't know how the Chinese might vote. They might very well veto any kind of UN authorization, which would mean that Ireland could not participate under the current rules of the triple lock. But perhaps the more significant thing is, as you say, the more practical issue as to whether or not there is the actual physical capacity of the defence forces. We are put to the pin of our collar to maintain our engagement in UNIFIL. We've heard all the stories about the naval service and the numbers in the army. So there's a genuine question as to whether we have the physical capacity to participate. But there are special skills in terms of areas like demining, in terms of dealing with improvised explosive devices that the Irish defence forces have real skill and capacity in. So it wouldn't take a lot to make a meaningful contribution.
If there was to be some sort of a peacekeeping force sent to the border between Russia and Ukraine, and if that wasn't under a UN mandate, what sort of a mandate might it be, and could Ireland participate?
Well, we have participated in UN-led operations. We have participated in EU-led operations, but all of those have had some kind of a UN sanction to them. So it would depend on whether or not the Taoiseach Minister for Defence pursues with his amendment of the triple lock. And if that pursues, and if the peace talks come after that, then there would be scope for Ireland to participate in an operation, even if it didn't have formal UN authorization, because of, as I say, machinations within the Security Council.
Ben, thank you very much. That's Ben Tonner, Professor of International Relations at the UCD School of Politics.